Over NBC's coast-to-coast network of independent and affiliated stations, the University of Chicago Roundtable, we present Bernard Berylson, Dean of the Graduate Library School and Chairman on the Committee on Communications at the University of Chicago. Mr. Berylson.
In this past week, the public opinion polls received a lot of attention at the Republican convention. Some observers say that the defeat of Taft and the nomination of Dewey was, in part, a result of pre-nomination public opinion polls. Immediately after Dewey was nominated, a leading opinion pollster gave an analysis of Dewey's voting strength and weaknesses, and so thoroughly compared Dewey and Truman public opinion poll records that there seems to be little use of holding an election in November at all. But are the public opinion polls a proper conception of democratic processes? Is it democracy by snap judgment? What are the dangers of the polls? Joining me in a discussion of Do Public Opinion Polls Serve Democracy? Are Philip Hauser of the Department of Sociology and Director of the Chicago Community Inventory, and Clyde Hart, Director of the National Opinion Research Center, both of the University of Chicago. Hauser, do the opinion polls serve democracy?
Well, Berylson, in my judgment, the public opinion polls have served, are serving, and will continue to serve democracy when they are competently, adequately, objectively, and honestly conducted. Fortunately, most of our major polls meet most of these criteria today. However, I should like to say that if public opinion polls are incompetently, inadequately conducted, or if they aim at personal objectives of survey directors, then potentially they can be a great menace and do a great disservice to democracy.
Hart, what is your opinion on the opinion polls?
I would agree, in the main, with what Hauser has just said. I would make it a bit more concrete by saying that the opinion polls do serve democracy by revealing the state of public information and misinformation concerning candidates and issues and other matters, by revealing the attitudes that people have towards important matters, the way they feel, how they think about these things, and not only that, but what lies back of their feeling and their thinking. By this means, I think, they do make available to people occupying positions where important decisions have to be made, they do give to these people a better factual basis for determining policies and implementing programs. My answer would be, again, a qualified yes.
I wonder if we can make this more concrete with reference to what some people think happened last week. As you will recall, in some of the nominating speeches at the Republican convention, those by Mr. Judd for Stassen and by Mr. Halleck seconding speech for Dewey, mention was made of the fact that the public opinion polls allegedly showed that these men had a very good chance to be elected. Now, is it a good thing for people to be nominated on the basis of what public opinion polls show they might be able to do in the actual election? Hart, what's your feeling about that?
Well, I would say, quoting a recent writer on that subject, Berylson, that the absence of scientific methods for measuring public opinion has never prevented politicians from trying to guess what public opinion is. The polls may implement the desire of these politicians to select candidates that will win rather than candidates that have the best qualifications for the office. But that's all that they do. They give them a little better implementation, and I'm not altogether sure that the politicians are wrong when they do select the candidates that are most likely to win.
Well, Berylson, I believe that the public opinion poll, in influencing to the extent that it may have influenced the nomination of the candidates at Philadelphia last week, have performed a fundamental democratic function, democratic with a small d, I might say. That is, in my judgment, if one has faith in a democracy, the people should have some voice in the determination of the nominees for the presidency. And I, for one, should feel that the public opinion poll, polling a representative sample of all of the American people, can give better guidance and act more in conformity with principles of democracy in a selection of nominees than the delegates in the general atmosphere and usual proceedings of a convention.
Hauser, you must know, however, that there are a lot of people who feel that in this way, it is simply the most familiar man who gets nominated, not necessarily the ablest. And it may be that if the ablest could get nominated in some specific situations, that he would then be able to carry his campaign to the country in such a way that he could get elected, even though the polls 6 months before might not give him much of a chance.
Well, Berylson, in our kind of a democracy, with a high rate of literacy, with our modern means of communication, it would seem to me that the man that is known to the American public is a man that is potentially the only kind of a candidate that perhaps should be selected as president. If a man has not become known on major public issues and on a basis of familiarity so that the average man can make up his mind as to whether he is competent to be president, I should say he possibly should not be eligible to run.
And, Berylson, isn't it true that the pre-nomination polls do make known preferences of the people and the position which they take with respect to major issues involved in the campaign and their judgment of candidates in terms of the positions they take on those issues? I don't think it's altogether just a matter of familiarity with the candidate.
Actually, then, if I understand you, Hauser and Hart, you feel that at the very least, at any rate, the public opinion polls are a good deal sounder basis for the selection of a candidate than smoke-filled rooms or private caucuses of one sort or another.
I would trust the people any time, Berylson.
So would I.
Well, that's for the pre-nomination polls. Now, what about the pre-election polls? As you know, those go on all through the summer, and they start by predicting who's going to win the election. What social value does that have?
Well, I would say, Berylson, that the question of the social utility of pre-election polls is quite different from the social utility of the pre-nomination polls. There, the problem becomes one of predicting the outcome. Now, there is great interest in pre-election polls. So far as I know, every major pollster who is doing them would be glad to retire from the field, even though he is interested in them because they give him a chance to try out his methods. But I don't believe that they do have nearly the social utility of the pre-nomination polls.
Well, I should agree, Berylson, that the pre-election polls are of more dubious value, make more dubious contribution to democracy than do the pre-nomination polls. However, I should like to make two points. First, it would seem to me that the pre-election polls, if centered upon issues, campaign issues, rather than merely on the question of which nominee is likely to win, might perform a supporting function.
However, Hauser, you have to recognize that most of the pre-election polls are not of that sort. Most of the pre-election polls indicate that one candidate is likely to win over another by such and such a percentage. It turns the election contest into something of a sporting event, like who's going to win a ball game or a horse race, to see if you can find out by following the polls who's going to win the election.
It
doesn't have any reference to the value of the election or what the
candidate is. That's true, Berylson. I would go along, as apparently you would, with the implication of what Hauser was just saying, that pre-election polling that is concerned with issues rather than with the problem of forecasting the election might have high social utility.
Well, Berylson, the other point I was going to make, and I should agree with the general remarks you've both made, is that the pre-election poll puts a burden on the entire polling technique, including the sampling technique particularly, much more so than the regular public opinion poll. In the pre-election poll, the sampling technique is required to make very fine determinations of fractional percentage points to determine who will or will not win. Now, to the extent that the pre-election poll may go wrong, it may conceivably do damage in the public mind to the accuracy of other public opinion polls. And if that should happen, it would seem to me the pre-election poll might itself do a disservice to polling public opinion in general and a disservice to the value of the public opinion poll in serving democracy in particular.
Hauser, if the polls are accurate, there seems to me to be another question which is often raised in connection with these pre-election polls, and that is that they foster a bandwagon effect, that if the polls show at a certain time that one candidate is far ahead, presumably, the thought is a lot of people jump onto that candidate's bandwagon and just lead him into victory.
Well, Berylson, as I said a moment ago, in speaking about the effect of the polls on candidates at political conventions who are choosing nominees for the major parties, here again, the polls do not create that tendency on the part of the American people to vote, to try to back a winner, to vote for the candidate who, in the judgment of people whose opinion they consider important, is the best man for the office.
Well, if I understand you then, Hart, you would agree with me that there is a bandwagon effect in political issues of this sort. I would go further to say that although I think there is one, I think it's relatively small considering the other factors which go to make up opinion. And I would go still further and say that the public opinion polls contribute only a small amount of the bandwagon increment to anyone's attitudes, along with the predictions of commentators and columnists and newspaper editorial writers and friends as to who the winning candidate is going to be.
Well, Berylson, what I've seen about the bandwagon effect leaves me unconvinced as to whether there is or is not an important bandwagon effect or any bandwagon effect. But I should like to make this observation. If there is a bandwagon effect, then I think that in no way can be interpreted as against the public opinion poll. If one has faith in a democracy, one then realizes that every person, every American, has a right to vote for a president on whatever grounds he feels justified.
Well, doesn't that amount, Hauser, to democracy by snap judgment?
Not at all, because with respect to the, first of all, the possible bandwagon effect, I should say that if the average American wants to vote for a particular candidate because he thinks that candidate is going to win, that's his privilege, and I'm willing to abide by it. But with respect to snap judgment, that's a rather complex question. There are some types of questions, policy questions, on which the average man, as in fact the average congressman, can exercise a judgment. But there are other types of questions, technical questions, which neither the average person in the public nor the average congressman is competent to answer.
Hauser, you're now speaking of another kind of public opinion poll from those which we've been discussing so far. We've talked about the pre-nomination polls and the pre-election polls, which by and large deal with candidates or men or personalities. Now, what about all the public opinion polls that deal with issues, with how people feel about certain issues? Do they aid democratic processes?
Good, Berylson. I'm glad you're turning attention to these other types of polls because all of us, I think, who are working in the general field of public opinion research feel that of all the types of work that we're doing, the pre-election type of polling is by far the least important. Our more important job is to find out how much people know about important public issues and how well they understand them and what their desires are with respect to them so that this information can be provided to people who are in a position to inform them or otherwise to make use of this information.
Precisely, Hart. And I should add further that the public opinion poll focused on important issues of the day and giving the American public an opportunity to express its opinion can prevent snap judgments on the part of our responsible political leaders. I should say that the public opinion poll can give guidance to our elected representatives so that they, in accordance with the principles of democracy, can follow the will of the people and, in that sense, prevent snap judgment, not contribute to snap judgment.
Hauser, may I interject just this one point at that in that connection, too, that public opinion polls, while they do have some bandwagon effect, have a distinct orienting effect upon the public. And when you consider the fact that millions of people are being polled this year on important public issues, the polls do serve to direct attention and to arouse interest in these issues.
I'm wondering, Hauser, whether this question can't be raised against what you have said. If all we need to do is to take a public opinion poll to find out what the legislature or the administrative arm of the government ought to do, then that would be a very simple thing. But I would take the position that a good deal of that needs to be qualified, that on some issues the public ought not to be polled, on some issues of technical means for achieving certain ends, for example, where the public is not competent, where that ought to be referred to governmental experts. There's a case, as you know, of some poll which went out to find out whether people thought that Congress ought to pass the Metallic Trades Act and found that a good proportion of them thought it should. Just happened there was no such thing as a Metallic Trades Act, and if that kind of thing can operate, then what about the administration of governmental policy by the polls?
Well, I should say in response to that, Berylson, I quite agree, as I said earlier, that there are some issues of public policy. Others are technical problems that require technical and expert response.
So that at least we have to make a distinction between those
right,
two.
Right, but I should follow through and say that I would seriously raise the question whether there are any issues on which the average congressman can vote or any issues on which the average delegate to a presidential convention can vote, on which the average American cannot vote just as expertly. On policy issues, I would continue to have faith in democracy and in the ability of the people to determine what their opinion is.
Moreover, Hauser, from the standpoint of democracy, isn't it important to find out how much people do actually know about one of these issues, how well they do understand it, and in general, what their interests are, which, after all, the congressmen and others who make these decisions are going to have to serve.
Well, I certainly think that congressmen ought to know as much as possible about how the public feels about a given issue, but I would disagree with Hauser that they then just automatically ought to vote what their district or what their state believes. I think there's still a very important function for the legislature, and I feel that the great value of public opinion polling here is that it provides accurate and reliable information for the legislature on what the public thinks.
Well, then,
he doesn't have to depend upon pressure groups or vested interest people of one sort or another.
Well, then, Berylson, the question becomes one of how the results of these polls are used. They can be used wisely or they can be used unwisely.
Well, Hart, let's ask Hauser about that. Hauser has been an official in Washington for some years. Are the polls used by government officials, Hauser?
Well, in my observation, it is certainly clear that increasing numbers of members of the Congress and in the executive establishment are watching the public opinion polls. Obviously, there is great variation in the extent to which members of the Congress or members of the executive branch of government are actually using the polls in the formation of their own decisions. But I think it's clear that public opinion polls are having a tremendous impact on the Congress and on the executive branch of the government in policy formation and in the establishment of program.
Hauser, don't you think that one of the ways in which people in government find the polls useful is in just the way implied by Berylson a moment ago, that they do reveal the state of public opinion and consequently give these people some protection against the pressure group representatives that are always sitting on their doorsteps.
Right, but I would add that there's another fundamental type of issue involved. There's been a classical debate, as we all know, as to whether it is the function of the representative of the people in the Congress or in Parliament to express the will of the people or to use his best judgment as he sees it in the public interest. Now, I'm not prepared to answer that question definitively, but I feel that it is reasonably clear that on many types of issues, it should be the will of the people and not necessarily a conflicting judgment of our representative that is the deciding factor.
Hauser, that seems to me to raise a great danger in the use of these polls, if I understand you correctly, and that is that the leaders might just begin to follow the polls. And as some of us know, there are some leaders on the scene now against whom the accusation has been made, that they wait till they find out how the public has made up its mind from the polls, and then they make up their minds in that direction. And that leads into a vicious spiral where the leaders follow the public and the public follows the leaders, and you never get any of the real function of leadership, namely to lead.
Yes, but on the other hand, you recall that during the past years, it's been clear that the public has been ahead of its leaders, as revealed by the poll. Certainly the public was prepared for the draft long before our responsible leaders were prepared to take action in that direction.
But, Hauser, you have to make a distinction there. The public was ahead of some leaders, alleged leaders, but it was behind others.
Right, but I would say the fundamental principle involved is this, namely, that leaders, although they should lead, and it's the wise leader that can stay ahead of his group, that leaders should always be responsive and responsible to the publics with which they're identified, and that the public opinion poll does create the possibility of much greater sensitivity and therefore responsibility of leaders to the public.
Berylson, it's also true that they serve these leaders by revealing areas of ignorance and types of misunderstanding, which the government really is responsible for clearing up. And if they're wisely used, as I said a moment ago, not just as giving dictates, but as showing problem areas, I think they can serve democracy and serve democracy very well.
Hart, right along that line, I wonder what you'd what would be your answer to this. Don't polls emphasize conflict and differences of opinion more than they emphasize a democratic process of adjustment and compromise? Do the polls represent a proper conception of democracy in this sense?
Well, I suppose they do emphasize conflict, but that conflict is really implicit in the democratic process itself. And to the extent that they bring that conflict out and shows what lies behind it, they provide a much more intelligent means whereby all of us can adjust ourselves to it.
Moreover, Berylson, I should say that that is one of the important contributions of the public opinion poll to the democratic process. It reveals areas of indecision, areas of disagreement. Those are the areas in through which other mass media of communication, it is possible for the American public to debate and consider issues and to reach a decision, to reach a judgment, which when communicated to our responsible leaders should presumably take action in the direction of the will of the
people. And right along that line, Hauser, I think when they reveal that there is indecision or conflict, where certain pressure group spokesmen are trying to indicate that there is unanimity of feeling and thought, they render a very great service.
Right.
I think one area here in which we haven't given very much attention to is what seems to me to be a very great utility of the polls, namely that they can give us much fuller information on public attitudes than can be given even by an election.
I would quite agree with that, Berylson, because certainly when the election of any specific candidates for whatever office, it is not always clear as to just what the attitude of the public has been on specific issues. The great contribution of a public opinion poll is that it makes it possible to break general positions down into specific issues.
You mean how,
sir? Multiple issues and break them down so that people can indicate how they feel about specific issues.
Hauser, you mean that, for example, if you vote for a certain candidate for public office, you might be voting for him for any one of five reasons, and an election wouldn't show which of the five you were voting in favor of.
Exactly,
right.
Berylson. The politicals talk about the mandate of the people given at the polls. I don't think the character of the mandate can very often be determined by the vote in a final election, but the polls can reveal the nature of that mandate.
And certainly one concrete evidence of that is the considerable discussion there has been and disagreement that there has been about just what the mandate of the American people was in the election of the last Congress, the 80th Congress. Now, the public opinion poll makes it possible to indicate what the American people did want with respect to specific issues which are involved.
I might even go further than that, Hauser, and make the assertion that in some respects, polls are superior to elections in this sense, that in an election, we count only the people who turn out. And that, of course, is far from 100% of the electorate. But if a poll is properly done with a large enough sample, I think is fair to say that the results of the poll give a better indication of how the people feel about those candidates or the issues under the election, at the election, than the election itself, because it counts all the people who don't go to the polls and whom rainy weather will keep away and so on, so that in a sense, if they don't agree, the polls and the election, one might say that it's the election which is off and the polls which are on.
I think that's a good point, Berylson. All the way through here, we've been assuming, of course, that these polls are well done in the sense that they invade areas that are important and areas which the public can be expected to know something about or which the leaders need to be informed about. This raises this whole question of distortion and misrepresentation, and it brings up this whole question of standards, which seems to me to be a very crucial issue. One about which all of us who are in the field are greatly concerned about.
Well, on that issue of standards, Hart, I should suppose that you and Hauser would have a good deal to say. You, Hart, are the president of the American Association of Public Opinion Research, and as I understand it, your organization is taking some action on the development of proper standards against the misuse and misrepresentation of polls In your annual meetings.
That's true. I think everybody would agree that the hottest session we had at the Williamstown Conference last year had to do with that. And we're looking forward to even a better discussion, I hope not any hotter discussion, in the meeting that comes this fall.
Well,
it happens that Phil Hauser here is the elected chairman of the Standards Committee of that association.
Well, Hauser, let me ask you then how the ordinary citizen, the man in the street, can protect himself against being misled and misused by a public opinion poll. What guarantees can he have?
Well, Berylson, in this type of situation, which is fundamentally a technical problem involving technical sampling problems, technical psychometric problems, many technical aspects that go into polling public opinion, the American public must depend upon the integrity, the honesty, the objectivity, and the competence of the people conducting the polls. Now, fortunately, these people have, for years, been quite conscious of the problems involved and of their responsibility and obligation to the American people. I think it is highly commendatory that these people in the American Association for Public Opinion Research have decided upon the formation of a standards committee and are determined to look into the problem of both professional ethics and standards of performance as a basis for reporting their results.
Hauser, we're not alone in it. It also extends to the commercial and market research people. Isn't that true? Didn't they recently take some rather important action in that respect?
Quite. As a matter of fact, just several weeks ago, there was an important press release in which representatives of the American Marketing Association, the Market Research Council, as well as the American Association of Public Opinion Research, issued two sets of standards. One was a proposed code of professional practices, which would place all public opinion polls as well as market and commercial survey work on a highest plane of conducting objective and honest and competent surveys. And the second was a standard of practices to be used in the reporting of survey results. This is particularly important because the poll that reports the actual techniques it has used, that reports the adjustments of any which it has made, that makes a perfectly open and clear record of the way in which the poll has been conducted and the techniques that were used, is a poll that is open to surveillance and one on which the public can bet.
Isn't it true, then, Hauser, that the responsibility comes back again to the leaders who are the users of the polls?
Right.
I think that what we've said on this University of Chicago roundtable this morning, Hauser and Hart, indicates first that we recognize different kinds of public opinion polls. There are the pre-election and pre-nomination polls, which indicate with some degree of accuracy who is going to win an election. There are information surveys, which indicate how fully or how well the public is informed on certain issues. There are the usual opinion surveys, which tell to what extent the public is for and against. And there are studies that we haven't discussed on the formation of public opinion. We have made the point that the polls are accurate now. They are getting more accurate, more reliable all the time, that improvements are coming, and that the whole question of professional standards is being met by the technicians in public opinion polling themselves.
Thank you, gentlemen. You've been listening to the University of Chicago Roundtable discuss, Do the Public Opinion Polls Serve Democracy?, with Clyde W. Hart, Director of the National Opinion Research Center, Bernard Berylson, Dean of the Graduate Library School, and Philip Hauser, sociologist of all the University of Chicago, as participants. This week's roundtable pamphlet includes the full text of today's discussion and a special article on Do the Polls Serve Democracy? By John C. Rennie of Smith College. A copy of today's pamphlet, including the special article on public opinion polls, costs only 10 cents in coin. Send 10 cents with your order to the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois. For $3, you may subscribe to the pamphlet for a full year and receive 52 issues. Be sure to write for your copies. Address the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois. Today's roundtable originated in the Mitchell Tower Studios of the University of Chicago. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations have cooperated in the presentation of this discussion, which brings the American listener various shades of opinion on important public issues. Programs in this series of particular interest to servicemen and women are broadcast overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Institute. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.